15 to 20 million jobs.
I am your future.
You have the power.
Isn't it about time for a change?
We are national leaders.
AmericanWorkersRadio.com. You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860 AM. As you know, we serve southeastern Pennsylvania, the state of New Jersey, and northern Delaware on the radio, and anyone can listen on the internet simply by going to the front page of AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live. And if you're tuning into our rebroadcasts, spread that around as well. You can listen to our rebroadcasts by going to the rebroadcast link right there on the front page. Today is a very special day, and I want to say happy Valentine's Day to everybody. It's been quite a week. A lot of things have happened since we were on the radio last Wednesday, and I want to welcome our panel members, Mark Andel, founder of the Made in America store, Larkin Conley, a national small business advocate, Rich Logis, principal of RJL Technology Integration, and our engineer, Henry Chaplinsky. I'm Michael Blihash, and joining us again today is the very distinguished Curtis Ellis, executive director of the American Jobs Alliance, who you know is also a senior advisor to President Trump. This is a real special day because on Valentine's Day, we wish everyone a lot of love and goodwill. And you know, through our broadcast, I think we really do that. We present facts, figures, and goodwill is what we're trying to do to get people together, to help one another, spread some love, go out of your way, look for those labels, and make sure that our people are employed. It's a big process, but I'll tell you one thing, having done this for 19 years, I think we really made some positive things come about. And by the way, I feel that our broadcast is very positive. It gives ideas to people. It gives reasons to people to support one another. Our broadcast gives hope. It asks people to go out of their way to help our young Americans to find ways of to be what they're going to be in adulthood. Go out and look for job skills, discover what you want to be. Make sure your parents, your family, your guardians, your friends, your neighbors are all involved. Letting them know what you want to be is also another way for them to spread the word to their children, grandchildren, and also their friends. Unfortunately, there are not many broadcasts like ours around, and that's why I appreciate so much hearing from people in my travels that they tune in, love the message, love Larkin, Rich, Mark, and Henry, and also Mr. Ellis. They love everybody working together. It's like the people getting to the diner and talking to one another about common sense ideas as to how we can help one another and make America great again. Now, I know that Mr. Andel has an obligation today at 11:25, and he's going to leave us a little early today. So I am going to turn the broadcast over to Mark Andel. Mark Andel, happy Valentine's Day, and what's going on with you?
Same to you, Mike, and the whole crew. Great. The whole crew is on a great day today, Valentine's and Ash Wednesday. Like you said, Mike, you couldn't have said it better. No, we're rocking and rolling. It's February, but General Welding is busy. Made in America is strong. A lot going on. We're getting ready. We have a big sale the last week of February because you're in the last week of winter, and it's tough on the people, the cold, the weather. So it's a great time to kind of liquidate stuff and give people an opportunity to buy at a better price. So we do a 20% sale coming up, Mike. Made in America and General Welding, just to really push before we get into the springtime. And you know, Easter's early. It's April 1st on April Fool's Day. So that's a big day for retail. So a lot coming up, and people are excited to get going in this first quarter to get get into the warmer weather in the springtime and the kids off of school for Easter and whatnot. But, you know, we had a lot. I had an opportunity to be a speaker last Friday at our local school, Iroquois Central. A teacher reached out to my Sue. Sue set it up, and this was neat, Mike. It was a leadership group. There was about 80 kids that attended. It was my school from back in 84, and it was the first time I was asked by this teacher, Judith Slodick, and Judith is a speech therapist, and she runs the leadership course, but she recognized, we had a great talk, I had never met her before, she recognized that a lot of these students and children, this one size-fits-all mentality of the school systems and the parents and the counselors isn't working so well, and it's I had sent an email out, Mike, also. But, you know, if a kid's made for college, super. But if you're teaching calculus in eighth grade and really pushing this student and it's not really for them, you can cause issues. So this teacher gathered and started this leadership program to give kids another opportunity, even if it's photography or skilled trades. And they wanted to hear real-life stories. So I had told my story, and, boy, these kids were wonderful. They're great. And they like to hear what you can do, and they don't like one-size-fits-all. They want to be exposed to more. So, Mike, it was great. It's a start. We're seeing all this movement to try to get schools and parents and guidance counselors to agree that it can't be one size fits all. We have to expose our children to the skilled trades and other avenues and give them a choice at eighth and ninth grade. So it was an awesome day. It was an hour long, and these kids had great questions. They really, and the teacher found out if you give them other opportunities, you stop the skipping out, the not going to school, depression. There's so much connected to giving these kids another avenue other than one size fits all, Mike.
You know, you're right. And Mark, I don't understand why they stopped asking the young people in seventh and eighth grade what they feel they would like to be when they grow up. You ever hear that expression, what are you going to be when you grow up? Well, I mean, that really did happen for many, many years. Why did that stop? Did we allow too much liberalism to take over the country and conservative values were pushed aside? There's something missing, and we're trying very hard to get back to where we should be. And that's really very important, that what you just said, going out to the schools. I remember even my kids, they would have the firemen and various people would come in to talk about what they do as a job and at an assembly. What happened to all that? They don't do that much anymore. The firemen or whoever come, it's very, you know, here's a few things, here's the hats, here's the hoses, and it's gone.
And Mike, I just want to mention at the end of this session, it was an hour, and they actually put it over to PA and got a lot of other people. It was in high school, in the library. And at the end, these two boy and girl that run this program stood up and asked, did the kids like it? For one, they liked it. They liked it. It was a real-life story. But what did they want more of? Did they want more people to come in and talk about colleges, or did they want more real-life stories, just like you're talking about? No, they wanted police officer, a fireman. They wanted people that did neat things and actually been there and done that. And it was neat to hear these kids talk to kids about what they want to see, but they generally all wanted more stories of real-life stuff. They wanted to hear about entrepreneurship, and I told them how tough it is, but I said never quit, never stay away from negativity, and don't let people tell you you can't do something. And
you know, you're right, and we discussed this once before. Since the federal government got involved in the school systems, our school systems have dropped. This one size fits all is not good. I mean, we have people in various states that need different types of job opportunities. They have to be told what's offered in that state. We want to know why people ran out of the state. Well, because they never really understood what kind of industries they had in the state. As the industries moved out of state, it killed many of our cities and our towns. They're ghost towns. And there's no reason for them. The problem is those factories, those institutions, all those technology places are now located in foreign countries.
And Mike, I got a chance to talk to the teacher that had asked me down. We got to know each other a little bit, and principal was there, and I asked him how to speak, you know, how it went, and they liked it. You know, I had fired him up. and excited them. And I said, where were you before you came to our school here? And she said, well, I was in the inner city in Buffalo, and it had gotten so bad, and she was one of the only positive things left in the kid's life. She knew that. But it was so bad around the boarded windows, the high grass, and she had asked her husband for a $20 bill to put in her pocket in case she was mugged. And her husband said, you know what you just said. So it's so sad that these inner cities are in tough shape. But she had to worry about her own life, too. And that brought her out into the rural suburbs. But there's so much that needs to be fixed.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'd like to devote an entire avenue of this in my next radio broadcast, maybe, to talk about what this human services have been focused on in the last few years, I would say 20 years, teaching people to take advantage of the government system. They're talking about all the access cards and everything. Majority of those people, especially working age and able-bodied people, really need jobs, not access cards. I go around. I'm in human services. I assisted someone this morning before I came to the studio. There is a lot of need out there, and the need is to help people understand that their human potential. What are they valuable at, and what can they add to society?
Larkin and Rich and Curtis, we all talked about it. Larkin had said, you can't criticize, you got to get engaged. Me and Curtis had to talk about giving kids a purpose. Rich fought the fight like I did to be who he is and never listen to nobody. And I remember Rich's garbage dumpster story to get, I think it was customer contacts, and came up to the grassroots and fought the fight. I think we can all agree that we have to allow these kids to have this avenue. And if we get on that one-size-fits-all mentality cannot work. And I think as parents listening in that, Mike, we could make a difference. I hear parents are the biggest driver that have to accept this change and accept that it's a reality. Kids can have a skilled trade job, and you get minimum college. We never down education. We always say two-year degree. We don't mind education, but it's okay to give them another avenue, and you can do well in life, and you'll never starve with a skilled trade.
And, Mark, it's like watching this on a computer. Some people say, well, we do everything on a computer. I'm sorry to say, the schools need to have hands-on ability. You can look at a computer all day, but if you've never done it personally, you're not going to know how to do it. Larkin, I hear you saying something.
Yeah, it's killing me, because I think Mark has really struck on something. I'm willing to admit, and both of my brothers make fun of me on an ongoing basis, but it's just the way we are structured as individuals. But I hated shop. I wasn't, they had to teach me which end of the hammer to grab. And I couldn't saw a straight line. I couldn't draw a straight line. I really, my hands are probably one of my biggest liabilities. And I was one of the few guys that, beyond being able to walk from our Catholic school some distance to the public school where we took shop, I really, didn't enjoy that. So put the shoe on the other foot.
However, however, Larkin, you did have the opportunity to give it a try, and then you decided one way or the other.
There's no question of that. But, you're setting kids up for failure. If they had nothing to offer me but shop, then I wouldn't have had an opportunity to really take advantage of my strong points. And that's essentially what the Department of Education has done. They, education went to hell in a handbasket. Literally the day they invented the Department of Education, and you can look it up. It's very easy to verify. You set these kids up for failure because, quite frankly, they're not built to be attorneys or accountants, and I'm not built to be a plumber. I really, I can't replace the innards of a toilet without calling a plumber. I'm an idiot when it comes to my hands, and I know that.
So, but Larkin, if you put the margarita down for 5 minutes, you could saw a straight line.
From Henry, very well said.
We're going to get Larkin welded.
But listen, Larkin, you're right. However, if the boys and the girls are asked in the 7th or 8th grade to fill out a form, maybe talk with the counselor, at least you know where to direct the person to the next step. go up just the ladder this way. And, you know, if the counselor saw that you are not a person for shop, then they would send you to the next high school, or they would put you in the next track at the high school where the regional kids went. It's just that they don't do that anymore. They're not looking for the human potential available from that individual.
They set these. They set our children up for failure. It's a known fact.
You're right.
And we discussed that college also, you know, with our veterans, with everybody, became a business, which you need college. But teaching calculus in eighth grade, this teacher said, "Are you kidding me? They're pushing this so hard, and the kid gets a D plus, and they're excited. It's just way too much push on it," is what her point was.
And by the way, will that calculus be able to help Larkin when he's ready to replace a toilet?
Yeah, I'm glad Larkin's young. We can still work with him.
The displacement of 10 gallons of liquid into from a tank to a bowl. That's about all I'll be able to do.
Dr. Curtis Ellis, how are you doing?
I am doing just great. Really enjoying this conversation. I would like to add that President Trump's budget increases the availability of Pell Grants for vocational training. Up till now, Pell Grants are these grants that are given for higher education. As a matter of fact, I went to school. My college education was paid for to a large degree by Pell Grants. Being a grant, you didn't have to repay it. I got out of college without any student debt. But they have been restricted to certain educational institutions and not others. But what President Trump has just put forward in his budget, it would allow Pell Grants to be used for vocational education. And
I admired that very much because, you know, like Mark was saying some time ago, that there, if you go to a tech school, you don't have the honors like you would if you went to Villanova or someplace. That has to be stopped. That has to be totally stopped. Your qualities, when you go to Europe, you go to Poland or England or anywhere else, you have a degree in what you are best at. Those teachers do not waste time. If you're going to be like Larkin and look at the product and say, "I can't do anything with it," well, then they're going to push you to the next category where you are going to succeed. In America, we're not doing that. It's that one size. Everybody sits in the classroom behind the computers or whatever, and they're just not preparing people for the jobs and technology, the robotics. All that stuff is needed in the new modern workplace, and our people are not coming out of the high schools or the colleges prepared for it.
Yeah, and Jay Timmons, the head of the National Association of Manufacturers, has said that we need to re-engineer the marketing and the understanding of what manufacturing is these days. People still think it's something that looks like a scene out of Lord of the Rings in Mordor, where you're like slaving over these, open cauldrons of smoky metal, liquid molten metal, and black smoke and everything. Most manufacturing these days, including even in steel mills, is being done with the aid of computers and with the aid of robotics and technology. And it's really kind of, if it was presented the right way, if people had a proper understanding of what it is, it's kind of groovy, you know? I mean, it's really space age, a lot of the manufacturing. I mean, I don't want to fall into the trap of derogating manual employment or working with your hands. But what the point I'm trying to make is, in line with yours, we have been denigrating a certain class of jobs, which is not helpful. We're trying to push everybody to become a doctor and a lawyer. And if you're not a doctor or a lawyer or somebody who works strictly with a computer and with dating myself with a slide rule, you're some kind of moron or something. And that's just not true, and it's insulting, and it's really not helpful for modern day life. I mean, there is a job a shortage of skilled employees, and part of that reason is we've just been discouraging people from pursuing their talents.
We've been punishing. We've been punishing America's youth. They're
that's
not.
Right. That's a good way to put
punishing
America's youth.
Yeah, and I sent that article, guys. That really these kids in that spot, it's just not working, and they get really not depressed, but down on themselves. They just can't swing it because it's not made for them, and it's hard when it's pushed, and you don't have the passion for it. You can't really get it. My sister worked very hard to become a registered nurse, but she got B's. But it was very, very, very difficult. But she did it. But sometimes what they're pushing just doesn't work, and the parents are, I hear, are a big part of it. So we need them to accept it. Okay.
Well, that's it. And so, you know, the way, Michael, you have this push for having businesses put a flag and prominently labeling Made in America on their product, we need a marketing push for these jobs, for vocation, call it vocational education, call it diversified career opportunities, call it the dignity of work. We need to get people thinking differently in this country, get parents thinking differently. My friend Steve Rotman, who is owns a plastic injection molding outfit down in North Carolina, they make just a wide variety of things, including dashboards and bumpers for automobiles, for BMW, because there's a whole lot of transplant and German automakers down there in the southeast. And Japanese as well, and they're making plastic injection molding is a very high-tech industry, and he's got a apprentice program built into his manufacturing facility there. Kids coming out of high school, even before they're out of high school, are working there part-time, learning how to make these very high-tech steel molds that are used to make the products, and going to school part-time. And he said the hardest thing, and by the time they are done with the apprentice program, they're earning $70,000 a year, debt-free, and they're set for life, you know. They've got a career and a job and no college debt, no student loan debt. The hardest problem he has recruiting people is convincing parents that there's a future in manufacturing.
Curtis, you just gave me an idea. I generally give a tour, and if I could get kids through at ninth grade, it's awesome, but a lot of times it's 12th grade. I give a tour, and everybody's changed. I just toured 7 guidance counselors from 2 local schools, and they were like, wow, I thought welding was just welding, and we got all types of things going on at General Welding. But maybe I need to walk the parents through. Maybe we got to get the parents through.
Well said, Mark.
That's a really good idea.
A federal bankruptcy judge hired me to take over a company in Tampa, Florida, and they made trash compactors, actually red bag waste trash compactors. And they made it from barred steel. And when I first took over, I went in there, and I spent a day with the welders. And I'm telling you, if you don't think a kid welder and a MIG welder are talented and artists and visionaries, you don't understand welding.
Yep.
I mean, they are outrageous in the way they think and the way they see things and just the artistry of the welding that they do.
Larkin, I'm glad you recognize that, because we're doing work for Halliburton, BP, ExxonMobil, and for Northrop Grumman. My TIG welders, I tell everybody, if you get into gas tungsten arc welding or TIG welding, that's the number one. No sparks, but the hand dexterity. We just interviewed a girl to hire because women have a lot more hand dexterity, but it is top-of-the-line work we're doing. It is by hand, not by a robot.
It's artistry.
Uh-huh.
It is. It truly is.
You also mentioned something which I thought was very important. It's time for us to start questioning school budgets. What are the dollars really being directed to?
Right.
I think we should see or be able to see in this modern day of the internet exactly where the dollars are being put. What teaching skills are available to the youth in the school? Is it just reading, writing, arithmetic? Why not some of the trades and some of the other aspects that people need? Electrical engineers, the mechanical engineers, industrial machinery mechanics. All those are needed in today's modern world. And in fact, if businesses want to open here, the biggest thing they're going to need is this level of traded person who's in the trades.
Hey, Mike, I got to take off, but have a great day, guys. Thank you.
It was a pleasure, Mark, okay. As always. Now, I know there's somebody, happy Valentine's Day, and I know that someone is ready to speak up, and that is Dr. Rich Logis. Happy Valentine's Day to you, Bojena, and to Isabella.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Good morning to everyone, our listeners. This is the 10th Valentine's Day me and my wife are celebrating, which is 10 more than I thought we'd make it to. So I stole this line flat out from Larkin. I married up. When Larkin said that, I said, oh, I like that line.
Yeah, that was very good.
I'm going to steal that line, because when Larkin said it, I thought, that's a good one. I just won't tell my wife I stole it. I'll make it sound like it was my line. You know, Larkin. You know how it is. It's like that old saying. It's like that old saying. Good artists borrow. Great artists steal. So thank you, Michael. I really appreciate it. And so if I may, just a couple things I want to recognize that are related to discussions we've had on the show before. I actually posted a video yesterday on my YouTube channel, Logis Productions. And I reposted the interview we had done with Chris Scalia. Yesterday was the anniversary of Justice Antonin Scalia's death. It was 2 years ago already. Amazing. It's already been 2 years. And as I listened, and thank you, Michael, for helping to make that interview happen. I really appreciate it. As I was listening to the interview again yesterday, I had this sense where I could hear at times I was a little nervous. And I don't usually get nervous, but his father was such a monumental influence on me and on so many Americans that I felt like I really had to be on the top of my game. So I think the interview really did come out great, not because of me, but because of Chris being on there and all the things we talked about. So that video, that interview is reposted on my YouTube channel. And again, thank you for making that happen. And as far as the trades, Michael, you know, I think even though my daughter is 18 months old, I think about this all the time. My neighbors all have children. We talk about this. We talk about it in the schools. And the common theme that always comes up, Curtis, all the time, is that if parents are not really involved deeply in what is going on in the schools, then what that means, what that's going to mean, is that the schools and the village are going to raise our kids for us. They're going to steer our kids in the direction of a job or a vocation that maybe those kids don't want to go to. And look, guys, maybe for some of those, you know, teachers are on the whole they mean well. They're good people, right? And they could be well intended, but still think that, but still are going to steer the kids perhaps in directions that maybe aren't best for the kids, even though the teachers may have the best of intentions. So if we're not involved from A to Z, if we're not present, if we're not persistent, if we're not perceptive of what's going on, other people, other entities, other organizations are going to raise our kids for us. And I would include in that the direction that kids may go for a job or a vocation. And that's the thing about children. Even with an 18-month-old, Michael, I will tell you, you know, kids are amazing in how they show you what they like and what they're good at.
Absolutely.
They do. Like, they really, and I've learned this at just having an 18-month-old. I mean, and so as she gets older, and we have to understand as parents, my philosophy is not to shame parents. It's to inform them. But then it's to get them off their, you know what, to give them an action plan.
One of my thoughts, being out working in human services, talking with people, doing home visitations, the teachers are hired to do what is requested by the school district, by the state. The state is not requesting the trade teachers to be available. Amen. So we're filling the schools with traditional teachers for reading, writing, arithmetic, but we're not filling the schools with teachers who will teach the boys and girls to go out and do something other than reading, writing, and arithmetic. Yes, Larkin.
No, I think you're exactly right. Teachers are dedicated professionals, and they're underpaid, they're underappreciated, but they can't teach shop if they don't have any hammers and they don't have any drafting tables, and the curriculum isn't provided by the Board of Education. So, you know, teachers do what the board allows them to do, and it's too bad that they aren't a little bit more vocal than they are in any and all districts in the country. But I, again, go back, and I'll argue this until I'm blue in the face with anybody who wants to discuss it. There is a direct correlation between the federal government forming the education, and I will give you a history the next time we talk. I'll have it down on paper. I can't remember if it was Carter or Reagan, but the department came to fruition under their presidency, and we literally started to slip worldwide, and we lost our direction when the Department of Education took over. It's an absolute fact.
You know, you're right, Larkin, and 30 years ago, as I said before, communications in America is not like it is today with the internet and emails and texts and everything else. Today, there is no reason for the school districts, the school administrators, the school boards not to know that they're not doing the proper job and they're not preparing the workers that are needed in today's industries. If 50 companies come back tomorrow, they say, we're moving back to America. We have our operations in other parts of the world. We're coming back. They would have a little bit of difficulty getting enough people ready, willing, and able, mainly able, to fill those technical jobs that the people in foreign countries have already been doing for 25 years. Do you agree with that, Curtis?
Absolutely. We have a huge shortage of people trained for the jobs that are out there. I've seen this for 10 years. As I've said before, I was at a shipyard in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin in 2007. And the shipyard owners were telling me the same thing I hear from Mark Danville. I hear from everywhere. We can't fill these jobs. These are $50,000 a year jobs. Last election cycle, the losing candidate was making appearances in Pennsylvania saying, we're going to train people for the jobs of the future. Welders, molders, all the manufacturing jobs that the Clintons and the globalists said would were sunset industries and never no future in them are now the jobs of the future. The fact of the matter is we cannot make America great again unless we train people for these jobs. President Trump's promise to make America great again requires us to train people for the hands-on jobs, the skilled trades that have been denigrated and dismissed by the elites for too long. And part of this, I believe, is this whole business. We heard little Dickie Durbin, Senator Durbin from Illinois, denigrating manual labor, saying these are the jobs that Americans won't do, and that's why we need to bring in immigrants from elsewhere in the world. There is this whole idea that working with your hands is somehow beneath us and second class, and it's really, really a foul notion. So if we the economy is underperforming because we don't have we have a mismatch of skills. The Secretary of Labor has talked about adopting the German model of apprenticeships,
where apprenticeships are part-time in school, part-time on the job, and the apprenticeship programs are driven by industry. Right now, we have Job Corps. We have various, the Labor Department spends billions of dollars on job training programs, but they're all concocted entirely by government bureaucrats without input, without sufficient input. I wouldn't say without any input, but without sufficient input from industries and from employers directing what kind of skills and what kind of jobs do people need to be trained in. So we need to revamp all that. And the Labor Department, the U.S. Labor Department, is starting to do that. I believe, and you know, I don't want to sound like a broken record here. For those who are too young, there used to be this thing called vinyl records, and when there was a scratch in the record, it would skip and repeat and repeat and repeat. So that's what I mean by sounding like a broken record. I'm not talking about the Dow Jones Industrial Average here. There, I'm trying to explain what a typewriter was, right? I mean, there was this thing called a typewriter, but I don't want to sound like a broken record, but there's a cultural bias against working, really against working. Everybody thinks they're going to win the lottery or they're going to become an NBA star, and once you shoot the three-point hoop 10 times in a row, you're set for life. That's not how the world works, and any job is a good job, and that's what Senator Durbin said. You know, we don't have parents saying, "I want my children to pick fruit." Well, actually, my parents told me, you know, take that job in the snack bar at the summer beach club, because learning how to work, any job is a good job. You will learn something from that job, and you will. It'll open the door to other opportunities. You'll learn, at least you'll learn what you don't like, and then you'll have an incentive to do something that you do like.
Exactly. So, it's better to have your hand at many things and not.
Michael?
Yes.
Can I have to, Larkin said this before, and I love when me and Larkin can banter back and forth, because no matter what Larkin says, agree or not, it's always worth listening to. But I've got to back him up in the trenches when he talks about the Department of Education. Look, are there people within the department who undoubtedly are good people, mean well? Absolutely. Michael, in the state of Pennsylvania, there are 500 public school districts. 500.
Right.
Not one of them, not one, is like the other 499. Not one. And how amazing is this? See, this is a point that I don't think is sold enough. I'm not talking about us. I'm talking broadly. How amazing is it that our education, it should be more, because school districts and residents of a district should be the main and perhaps I'd argue virtually the only influencers of what goes on in those schools. That we can enact. At least we can go into a school board district and elect representatives, which are volunteer and unpaid. I understand that, right? But we can elect people to go in and shape the education of that district. The federal government has zero clue about those 500 school districts, Michael. In the state of Florida, there's 74. We have 74. Curtis, I'm not sure about New York. But I'm sure there's a lot of public school there. I was a product of public schools. So how amazing is it that we can actually, even the most local of things, schools, we have some democratic say in it. So what I really hope with education in America, well, I hope for a lot of things, but one of the things I hope for most is that if the Department of Education is going to be around, that it be so... so small, it's you don't even realize it's there. So lack of influence, you don't even realize it's there.
You know, as we're speaking,
and Larkin is so right. Larkin is so. I got to tell you, Larkin, this is so. You're so on about this. And you know something? One last thing. This whole like eliminate the Department of Education. This has become a very widespread dare I say, somewhat even bipartisan belief, I think. I think it really has. I think that way of thinking, not solely with just one party or political ideology.
Well, it's a very good, I think it's time for us to start promoting to the elected people, the people running for office coming up in the midterm elections and even the people running in the various states, that it's time for us to focus no less than 30 or 40% of our dollars in training our young people for what they would like to be in the future, not what we want them to be or the school board wants them to be, just to save money. Every time I speak to educators, they say, well, that's a very expensive program to have. And I say, yes, it is an expensive program. But when somebody learns something, they have possibilities. When the kids are coming out of school today, they have no possibility. So what do we push them to? They have to go to some form of government, or should I say taxpayer-supported benefits, and then maybe some of them go into training programs that they have to pay for. Why can't they do that in their junior high and high school years? Curtis, that's a very interesting question. How did it get to the point? I mean, you've been through the system, through the American Jobs Alliance. You've seen all the various things that have happened to America over the last 25 years. How was it that it was just allowed to be taken off the table of our school boards?
Well, it's part of it is the concentration of decision-making power, I believe, as it flowed upward to the Department of Education. And, you know, we have these the idea of things like Common Core and the academic think tanks and, you know, academic brainiacs designing new education reforms dovetailed with this conceit that came out of the elite universities that we are in a post-industrial service economy. And we're going to offshore all of our key industries, and we're going to be a nation of designers, designed in California, made in China, and which is a fundamental misunderstanding of how innovation works, how manufacturing works, how design works, and how human beings work. And I believe it dovetails into the liberal conceit, left-wing liberal conceit, that human beings are eminently moldable into any form we desire. Another affectation and conceit of the liberal bias that we want to go back to a pristine, clean, pre-industrial or post-industrial era of blue skies, free-running streams, and the whole country is going to look like Northern California and we're going to live in teepees or something. I don't know what. But, I mean, without getting too crazy about this, there's just sort of, as you know, there's what happened with the Democratic Party is, I'm not going off on a tangent here. What happened with the Democratic Party is that the blue-collar union guys were pushed out of the party in 1972. After 1968, they were pushed out of the party and replaced with the new left, academic, far leftists. Their goal was minority representation, identity politics. The party's going to represent the poor oppressed ethnic minorities, the poor oppressed sexual minorities, the poor oppressed whatever, different fragments of the population. Left out of the roster of who the party was going to represent was the union guys, or more broadly even the non-union guys, the working people, people who work with their hands, actually make the country run, rather than take orders, rather than make orders and write directions for everybody, the people who actually make things. That used to be the backbone of the Democratic Party. They were taken out of the party. And bearing in mind that the federal bureaucracy is controlled by the left, by the liberal, and by the Democratic Party interests, suddenly this consciousness had no place. The understanding of the role of making things and actually producing things and what how people actually operate and how this economy actually works, that was nowhere to be found in the federal bureaucracy. And they started mandating things to school. The federal bureaucracy starts putting mandates on schools and offering directives to schools and offering directives of what education should look like, what we should be teaching. And industrial arts and vocational skills was replaced with gender studies and ethnic studies. And suddenly that became the priority. And I believe that that's a big part of how this whole thing happened. And then you had, as I said before, you had on top of it this conceit, this theory that we are in a post-industrial service economy. The same way we went from agriculture to industry, we're now going from industry to services. And everybody's going to be a lawyer. Everybody's going to be an accountant. Everybody's going to be, a financial advisor. Because make no mistake, when they say service industry or a service economy, what they're really talking about is financial services.
Right.
They leave that off. They leave financial off because what they're talking about is an economy run by Wall Street, and an economy that's Wall Street-centric, the FIRE sector, finance, insurance, and real estate. And what we've seen, and I don't know if correlation is causation, but at the same time as we saw a drop-off in the education of vocational skills and trades, as we saw that disappear from the schools, concomitant with that, we saw the finance sector of the economy balloon from single digit to almost a quarter or more of the economy. So as people stopped learning, at the same time, kids were not being taught how to do things. We also saw at the same time in our economy, a greater share of the economy was being taken over by paper shufflers and the financial speculators, rather than being in the productive sector, actually making things. So our economy stopped making things. Instead, we started speculating and ballooning the finance sector. At the same time, we stopped teaching kids how to make things. I don't know if that's a coincidence. It seems a little too neat correlation to dismiss as simply a coincidence.
Yes, sir, you're right. You're right, Curtis. I have to say this, that many people, I would say 10 or 15 years ago, told me, Michael, you have to get with it because we're just going to be doing the billing in America and the processing. The hard work is going to be done somewhere else. And you see what that has done. It's placed millions and millions of people on government programs. No skills, no possibilities. Human potential is ruined.
And look, this is not the first time it's happened, because look at what happened to the British. Look what happened to the British economy and the British Empire, if you will. But look what happened to Britain. They were the greatest industrial power on earth. And then they got corrupted by Cobdenism. They got corrupted by the theory of free trade. Great Britain, became the greatest industrial power on earth by practicing protectionism and by absolutely favoring their own industries and the development of industries. It was illegal to export raw wool from Britain. It had to be made into textiles, right? That's how they did a variety. They had a variety of laws like that to encourage the growth of industry. But after they became number one, then they got fat and lazy, and they got this utopian idea that we're going to open our borders to everything. We're always going to be number one, so we want to encourage free trade. And what happened was America overtook them because we practiced what Britain did to become great. And we built up our own industries and protected our own industries from foreign competition so that we could become great. Abe Lincoln said, we're going to build a railroad, but the railroad's got to be made with American steel. Even though it's cheaper to import rails from Great Britain, we're going to make our own rails. That way, at the end of the day, we'll have a railroad and we'll have a steel industry and we'll have the jobs and the money.
That's right. And that's exactly what has to happen in America. I went out
then,
to...
One last piece, though. So as Britain lost its industry, what did they do? They became bankers to the world. The city of London is a great financial center. So they were left with their financial industry, and they thought that would be enough to carry their nation. And those same thinkers and the same idea infected the American elite and said, well, we don't need all these other industries. As long as we're doing finance, our country will be okay. And they were wrong.
I see that. You know, I went out to Staples the other day. Boy, what an interesting observation I had. I went in there to buy shipping tape for boxes. And I started looking around and I talked to them about a particular machine that I had that's starting to get a little bit shaky. It's only about 3 years old and unfortunately wasn't made in America. And I said to the guy, is there anybody here that would know how to fix it? He says, oh, no, just throw it out and buy a new one. Just, you know, goodbye. Nobody knows how to fix anything. Motherboards and all are made all over the world, not in America. Nobody knows anything. So
you're
then
a swing line stapler.
It's almost a swing line. I don't want to start on the name, but the Scotch brand of tape is made in the USA and it's proudly put the nice label right on the top, made in the USA. The staple brands are all made all around the world. I don't want to say where, but they're made all around the world, but not in America. So, ladies and gentlemen, when you're out at the store, pick up those items. Take a look at it. And by the way, I'd like to put this idea out. People tell me, well, they took all these brand names. They're owned by this country and that country. Well, maybe it's time for America's businesses to start putting new brands out. Why can't we have the Larkin Connolly copier or, you know, the Curtis Ellis or the Rich Logis or the Mark Andel something or other? What do we need brand names for as long as the product does what we need it to do?
All right. I'm down with that.
There's no question. I just wanted to mention in my and I'll have more the following weeks because I don't know enough about this topic to discuss it, but in my my movement from my current home into my humble abode in St. Augustine, I spent yesterday with the Miracle Window and Sunroom people from Northeast Pennsylvania, who manufacture direct purchase of and installation of windows, proudly made in America. And we ultimately had a long conversation. And the owner of Miracle Windows will be on this program very shortly, very soon, to talk about how important his industry is to the town that he's in. And I know he knows the education people. I know he's one of the main employers in the little town in Northeast Pennsylvania that they're located. And I know that the schools are preparing children coming out of that schools to supply the workers in that in the plant. He employs, I think, 500 people. I can't remember. I don't know enough, but I will know plenty when we talk about this. And I'm going to get him to also talk a little bit about education in his little town and if there is any connection between the local manufacturers.
And you're right, Larkin. It's the same thing with Northeast Windows here in Philadelphia. They're totally made in America. They're looking for qualified people. They're encouraging the public schools and other, you know, operations to get them more qualified workers so that when they replace a window, it's 100% made in America. But we have to get after the schools. The federal government, I believe, helped create this monster by not focusing the dollars that they were giving and not urging the districts throughout the United States to give the money, 30% for reading, writing, and arithmetic, 30% for the trades, and 30% for all the professions that the people want to be in. We have to get somewhere where we know where the money is going. They go to the school board meetings and they say, we need another $1 million this year, so we're going to have to tax this and that. But what is all the dollars that they have at their disposal right now going to? That's the problem. That's the question. I hope that all the governors, the president, all the elected officials in Washington will start asking. And by the way, this is a Democrat, a Republican, and an independence problem. No one has spoken up since the Department of Education was established to bring this to a halt. They saw that our availability to a lot of these trade programs weren't here. We were bringing people from all over the world to substitute because our people weren't here. Somebody has to take the bull by the horns and really try to wrestle this thing and get it addressed. On this Valentine's Day, I think we have to start sharing the love. Make sure you call up your school board, your principal, and say, and by the way, I would like my son to have a little more exposure to some of the trades and this and that to see if that's what he'd like to do.
You know, I lecture my children to be as politically active as I have been my entire life. And they've seen me run for office. They've seen me be involved. And my latest kicks to them is you have to get involved locally or you really have absolutely no right to criticize or no right to say anything ill about the way the government is running if you're not involved. And heck, voting is just this, is just step number one. But I've told my children recently, you need to get involved in your Board of Education. You need to start going to the meetings. And you need to start hearing what they're talking about and saying. And if whether you believe in creationism or Darwin or whatever, you can't criticize and you can't be a part of your children's education if you don't take part in the forming of it. So to all of those 25 to 40-year-olds who have children in grade school, elementary school, and secondary school, get involved in the board. Go to the meeting and make your voice heard. And the first thing you know, you might be sitting on the board.
Rich Loges, we're going to begin our countdown. This has been a very interesting hour. On this Valentine's Day, on this Ash Wednesday, which hasn't happened in many, many years where the two of them were together, I want to wish all of our listeners the very best. Spread a little love. I'm spreading love to all my family, all my daughters, my little granddaughter, Isabella, and is going to have her daddy kiss her. I'm going to have Gabriella today. We're going to do a lot of positive things to make sure that good happens for the children. It's our future that we're looking forward to. I want to say thank you to Curtis Ellis, Mark Andel, Rich Loges, Larkin Connolly, and Henry Chaplinsky, and all of you for helping make today's broadcast the very best. Until we meet again in my travels or this Saturday at 11 here on 860 or next Wednesday, I wish you and yours the very best. Happy Valentine's Day. And closing remarks from the gang. Curtis.
I'd like to say on this Valentine's Day, which is Ash Wednesday, the message is love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And teach these words to your children.
God bless you. Very well said. Larkin Connolly.
Yes, I wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day. And with the start of the holy season on Ash Wednesday, may the Lord take care of you, hold you in his arms as you love him, as he loves you.
God bless you. And Dr. Rich Loges.
Everyone, yeah, thank you so much. Happy Valentine's Day. If you're asking yourself, when's a good time for me to start getting involved, I'd answer right now.
Very well said. Right. Oh, I'd love to have you on the school board in Philadelphia. Whoa, Rich. I'll get you imported over here and you'll get on that board. Well, thank you all. Henry, thank you for all of your help. thank you for spreading the word. We will have a rebroadcast of today's show up in a few hours. Do spread it around. Until this Saturday at 11, my best wishes. Once again, happy Valentine's Day.